sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Well, hello and welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. This is Andrew Horowitz, and you're listening to episode number 297. And this is going to be an interview that I think will be really interesting today. The guest we have today is Amy Smith from Investors Business Daily, who wrote a really great book on success stories and following the IBD process of, you've heard of Can Slim. Anyway, we're going to talk with her today a bit and try to find out what is going on in the world of investing in terms of individual successes. She did a lot of research to find that. Otherwise, obviously, earnings season, you know what's going on. There's nothing I can't tell you that wouldn't be probably a surprise at this point. And as we have been watching the economics roll in, there's, kind of a combination of good news, bad news that goes on. And it all depends on how markets want to define it at any given moment. And that's kind of what we've seen, this jumpy nature of, good news, bad news will affect things in a certain way momentarily, then turn. And again, you have to kind of look at this in a longer term trend situation. I think that's kind of stepping back and looking at maybe the weekly charts right now of the general trend and see how it's unfolding and whether or not we can, continue on without any kind of significant deviation than what we've been seeing lately. But we'll see. We'll see more about that. Anyway, we'll talk about that more next week. We'll do analysis of the markets and a few other things. And I mentioned to you also this week that we're going to have a little bit of a shorter show covering not much topic other than actually this great interview that hopefully will spark some interest. Why not get right into it? But before we do, let's mention our sponsor is, of course, GoToMyPC. And one of the big things that you probably have on a regular basis is, you're out of the office, you're out of your house, and you want to file, and there's different ways to go about doing it, but how do you do it securely? How do you do it really at a best-of-class type of service where you can really just remotely operate your computer from virtually any device, whether it's a laptop, another computer, whether it's a handheld, portable mobile device of some sort, an iPad or an iPhone or Android phone, whatever it is, any kind of a tablet. Basically, you can use GoToMyPC, and it's, again, secure remote access tool from Citrix, and you're never going to have to worry about carrying a flash drive again. Basically, it gives you the freedom to work whenever and wherever you are. So the nice thing is it's very easy to set up, and the better thing is you get a 30-day free trial. Go to gotomypc.com, click the try it free button, and enter the promo code podcast. Then you download it, and it's just a freebie. It's great. Good stuff. Gotomypc.com. Check it out. And now we have a special guest, someone I haven't talked to in a while, actually. Her name is Amy Smith. You'll probably remember her from a podcast that we did, or you have tuned into her podcast and radio show. She is the co-host of How to Make Money in Stocks radio show. Works with Bill O'Neill over there at Investors Business Daily and has a new book out called How to Make Money in Stocks. Wouldn't you believe that? Success stories. Now, this is interesting because it kind of goes a little bit to the next level of not just how to do it, but it explores some of the people that have done it and used the system and, frankly, successfully. So, Amy, how are you?
Hey there, Andrew. Thank you so much for having me on your show. You have a great show. I am excited about this. I have to tell you that I checked the Amazon. I just haven't. I've been working too hard, and I checked the Amazon rankings today, and it's officially a bestseller, which is neat. But
yay.
The thing that's really the most exciting about it is that through the success stories that, and I know you're very familiar with IBD, but through the success stories, anybody can really learn to invest successfully. Now, you have to put some time in, and you have to follow some rules, But what I was really excited about is people of all levels. There were people trying to pay back their student loans. There were intermediate investors, and then there's pros in there, too. So there's something for everybody in the book.
Yeah, good stuff here. So let's kind of dig through this a little bit. I know it just came out, just folks, that just to let you know, it's available on Amazon, and you can get your copy again, How to Make Money in Stock Success Stories. So I guess that the big question is that, what level, how much time has somebody have to put in to get to the level where they can actually begin investing with some kind of a reasonable strategy? Is it something where somebody has to study, you know, and read books and let's just stick with IBD's strategy, you know, over and over and over again over a period of time? Is it something that's, you know, what is your experience talking with all these people?
You know, that's a really good question, Andrew. And I think, you know what, I'm glad you asked that because I don't think anyone else has sort of discussed that with me.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm hearing. That's why the show is so good.
That we're brand new. And when I say brand new, I mean like they've been doing it a few months. We had a new uptrend. They bought a few stocks. Now, maybe they only got 12% because they were brand new to this. But you know what? Compared to what your money market account would get you, that's a huge success. And they did that in like 5 or 6 weeks in a stock. So those are the real beginners. Then I have some intermediate people. Let's say they've gotten to a really consistent basis. They get the 20 to 25% gains. They lock them in. They do pretty well year after year. Everybody makes mistakes, of course. And those people maybe have been doing it a couple years. And then, of course, we have the pros who've made, you know, millions of dollars. But, of course, they have really invested a huge amount of time to get to that level. So I would say anybody can do well in the market. All you need are a couple of good stocks every year, and, you know, you have some outstanding results. So I definitely would encourage anybody, if they're not sure if they can do it, you absolutely can do it.
Now, one of the things that I find of real interest is that I'm going to go back about a year, just about a year.
Okay.
And it's been a very interesting call of when and when not. The market's in an uptrend, downtrend, depending on the severity, because it's been, while I do understand that there are some very key rules looking at specific markets and looking for distribution mm-hmm. days and all that, there's been a little bit of wacky things that have gone on in between. Don't you agree?
I do. And you know what? Here's another thing that I want to encourage people. You know, we've had a 4-year bull market. And you know this, you follow this all the time. So as you get to the end of these bull market runs, you get more choppy behavior in the market. You don't make the huge gains that you might have made. You know, if you got into Baidu or Priceline or Netflix and you got a 1,000% run, maybe you got Chipotle Mexican Grill or Lululemon or some of those big winners from the bull market, you can still get the 20-25% if you hit the sweet spot. And mm-hmm. you're absolutely right about that. Now, first quarter of last year, that was the sweet spot. That's when we had stocks that were doing really well. We had Apple, Michael Kors, TransDigm, Equinix, and then in February we had SolarWinds, Dillard's, and eBay. So I think what is key here, you're right. You know, when you play the market, when you see these stocks breaking out more than one, you need you know, a nice grouping of them. And when you see them breaking out, that's when we play.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if we have an uptrend, you know, it's not easy for any of us. It's not easy for you or me. But when I buy some stocks, we're in an uptrend, and you know what? I'm not making any headway. It's not probably the stocks that I've picked. It's that the market was very choppy and indecisive the way it was at the end of last year.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, nobody did really well in the fourth quarter.
It was rough. I mean, you know, until the last week or so, and then we saw, you know, that's the other interesting thing about this market condition. I was pretty sure that IBD would have called at about somewhere about the end of the year a marketing correction, but I guess the volume really laid off and all that. But what's interesting is that I do agree with you on one hand that you want to find those stocks that will do well when the markets are in a general trend on the upside, of course. But it's also interesting that there has been this rotation that seems to be coming on. It's broad-based market, it's sector, and then stocks. You know, you have a stock down for a couple of days, they pop it the next day. You have it up 3 days, it's down a couple the next day. Now, that doesn't mean the trend is just flat with a stock or with the markets. But it's mm-hmm. almost like, you know, I'm getting the sneaking suspicion that there's a lot of gaming going on with machines, which is something that, you know, Mr. O'Neill didn't have in his early day, by the way. But obviously, you know, we adapt to that. And at the same time, because a lot more information is available to the public in a much more easy, you know, zero time span. In other words, no delay. I think that's really interesting. But let's take a look at some of the things that you've talked about. One of them actually is something that I actually have my portfolios and myself, and we talked about a lot on not only this podcast but on the DH Unplugged. And generally, these 3D printers, which I tried to actually explain that to my wife today, what a 3D printer is. And I found myself having just all this difficulty because she's like, oh, you get a piece of paper that comes out like a 3D pop-up book. I'm like, no, it's not that. It's kind of like you have I explain it's in its infancy. I explain that it kind of can create a cog for a part for something, or, you know, if you have the diagrams and you feed the CAD design into the thing, you could make a cup. I'm just saying, you know, depending on the materials, because right now in its infancy, the materials are still not all there to make everything. So I just stopped my whole discussion. I said, oh, it's like a replicator from Star Trek. That's what I said.
You know? Well, you know what you could say? You could say the owner, or the guy that developed the 3D systems, actually made a prototype guitar. You know, they make airplane parts. Let's see if, you know, a company wants to manufacture that. What does the product look like in 3D? I know it's a little crazy. It's a little hard to understand. But you know what was different about that? We had this 3D systems. It was one of the best performing stocks in IBD last year. Mm-hmm. I think it was up 271% for the year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was a new name. See, it wasn't Priceline again. It wasn't Netflix again. It wasn't the stocks that have corrected sharply off of their peaks. 3D was kind of it wasn't a brand new name, but it was certainly a name that had, you know, was starting to capture attention. And you know what? It captured the attention are those big, huge earnings that they produced. You know, they had earnings were up 78% in the most recent quarter, and sales were up 57%. So when you have stocks like that, you know, that captures the institutional investor, and, you know, they're the ones that really shoot stocks higher. You know, by the way, that stock was kind of choppy, you're right, it was a little difficult until January 2nd, and we got the fiscal cliff thing sort of somewhat resolved, if you want to say that.
You're being kind,
And then the stock took off again. Yeah. So these stocks are held down sometimes by the general market, but boy, when that market takes off, those are the ones that, you know, really take off again. Ones that are, you know, they're building a base, they're setting up, and this one took off.
Yeah, and the other stock, which actually, for whatever reason, has a little bit more of a, you know, darker cloud over it, doesn't, is Stratasys, which is kind of like a, you know, but Triple D seems to be like the company that everybody is really preferring, at least from the charts. I've done some investigation, and since I've started talking about this, I've gotten a lot of feedback. You know, they're really starting to move into the commercialized areas. Matter of fact, at CES earlier or mid-month, there was a discussion about the newest machine they're bringing on, and that really was kind of an interesting thing because they're really starting to develop when 3D systems first came out, they were kind of like, hey, that's cool, let's make a little figurine, you know, at the house kind of thing, right?
Right.
And now they've developed into more of a much more commercial application. And what I think is really cool about this is when we get to the day that you no longer have to stock parts or certain parts for an engine or for a watch or for whatever it is. And you could just kind of have these diagrams that have been fed into by the manufacturers and then print it and, you know, comes out in however long a time it comes out. And then you utilize that for the part, you know, think about how great that is.
You know, it's probably something, you know what, when I was a kid, if I had seen that on like a sci-fi show, I would have said, oh, you know, come on, right. Like, we're never going to be able to produce something like that. But these are the innovative companies that, you know, they come up with something, you kind of go, wow. I mean, do you remember the first time you saw an iPod? Didn't that just blow you away that you could listen to music, that Apple produced a product like that? And 3D systems is the same thing. These are the companies that we search around for. It doesn't mean, obviously, that it's going to continue, but it is number one in the IBD 50, and it's number one in your weekly review. It's been that way for several weeks, and, you know, that's a company to keep watching, definitely.
By the way, just to clarify for the audience, the first MP3 player that I saw was made by a company called S3, and it was a 32-megabyte device, and it was extraordinarily difficult. I had one. I had a few of them, actually. I even went up to the 64-megabyte one. The problem was, by the way, this is interesting. The difference between why they failed, by the way, the company went out of business, which is kind of, you know, how'd that happen, right? The difference was that the process of getting music on and off, number one, You know, managing your music was hard. Number two, of course, there was limited space. Okay, I'll give you that. The third issue, though, was MP3s were still being you had to really, you know, get those yourselves by burning them off of or, unburning them from a CD. So you got your own MP3. So now you had to go through this whole process of, okay, number one, I got to burn the MP3 and I got to, you know, record that. Then I got to put it on the device. Then I got to manage it, which didn't work half the time. But
right.
That I still have it in my drawer at home for one day I'm going to pull it out and say, look,
I had the first one. Well, see, but you just said something again. When we invest in a company, see, they had something cool, but Apple made this so easy to use.
Yep.
See, all the things that you said were all the things that Apple did right when they produced the iPod. So, again, the one thing that's fun about investing is digging in, finding these companies that are doing these exciting things. And for me, I don't know, it never gets old.
Yeah.
I love it. I love discovering these new companies. I love, you know, reading about them in the archive section on investors.com. It's fun.
Yeah. Let's talk about some other things here that I think are interesting. I mean, you mentioned a variety of stock. For example, you mentioned Apple and Coors and TransDigm and SolarWinds, et cetera. You know, it's interesting because SolarWinds could have shaken out like probably 100 times.
Yeah,
last 2 years, you know,
some of these stocks, though, they're not the darlings. You know what? It's you look back and you go, oh yeah, of course I should have. That was one of the best winners of 2012. But you're right. If you look at the chart, even if you take a look at the daily or you look at the weekly, the only way you could have just you needed to have confidence in the company, and then what I think you needed to say, well, it kept making higher highs and higher lows as it built these bases. But I'm looking at the chart right now. It got a pretty funky-looking double bottom. Then it built a pretty deep cup base. Then it built a flat base. And then it corrected some more. You're right. This was not the easiest stock to hold. It wasn't.
Yeah. It wasn't like an Apple from the previous years or whatever.
That's right.
One of the things that's interesting is that Michael Kors, which does actually score pretty well on IBD, and it is one of those stocks that maybe it was looking really good. I'm kind of interested because full disclosure, we are, as of right now, short the stock. We've gone short the stock a few different times, and it's been, relatively successful, break even, because it seems like the stock always has a bid to it. You know, even though the luxury retailers, when they get hit, and I'll go one step further. Let me just kind of, this is more of a concept discussion. Buffalo Wild Wings is a stock that we said, hey, wait a minute, you got a big problem here because of this. We laid the thesis out. We were short the stock and it did drop down very dramatically. We made nice money on it. And then it starts to creep back up again. Is nobody listening to the management of the company saying, hey, listen, we're going to have some tough times because food costs have gone up and this and that, right? Menu prices and blah, 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 blah. What is the whole philosophy behind a stock goes down, and I know this bad news, but I'm buying it anyway?
Yeah, something. Of course, I don't buy stocks when they go down, obviously. If the stock is hit with a lot of news, it's just something that I would stay away from. But, with Michael Kors, and you and I both know this, we've followed the market for so long, the key thing, again, can they do well in earnings? We started with earnings season with Alcoa, and, a lot of the future of stocks will be, are they just disappointing? Have institutional investors lost their taste for the stock? And if so, you're right, then maybe your shorting strategy will make a go of it.
Yeah, and what's interesting is also that Alcoa, for example, we know that the earnings estimates came down anywhere from 25 to 30%, depending on EPS or revenues, just within the 4 weeks prior to the earnings. Company met earnings. Stock still rode up into the earnings, and the stock kind of, didn't do anything after earnings, per se. Right after the earnings announcement. But what's interesting is that this is the whole point of an uptrend. Sometimes there's a lot more forgiving nature of investors, for whatever reason, in an uptrend than there is in a downtrend, clearly, right?
Yeah, there is. And that's an excellent thing for people to remember as investors. And that is so true, and that's a wise thing. I hope you repeat that again on your show, because that's particularly true. If you're in a strong bull market and a company kind of, they disappoint a little bit, the market is so much more forgiving if you're in the beginning of that bull run. But I tell you, when investors, the professionals, when they get a little scared and a company doesn't do what they think, and we're sort of at the end of the run, or maybe a company's already had a big run, there's been a big price move on it, people will bail out of it, the big institutional investors. And, of course, you can get really hurt if we, as a smaller investor, are sitting in there with a big position. So just always know where you are in the context of the overall bull market run, and where are you in the context of the stock's overall move. Right. You know, how much has the stock already moved? You're at a greater risk if you're buying something that's already gone up a couple hundred, 300%, you know, need to be aware of that as an investor.
So let's talk about the book a little bit more, because I am kind of really fascinated. There's, I have a good friend, Jack Schweiger, who also looks at the Market Masters and all that and looks at the successful things to try to give the examples of what people have done, because that's the best way to do it, of course, is to give real examples. What kind of a couple of things? Number one, what did you notice about when you were, because you didn't just pick people, you had to find a variety of people and screen them and figure out who you wanted to talk to about this, right?
I did. Yeah.
So there's probably people in there that did.
I'll tell you what I found. You know, one thing you might not know that I do in addition to being a market commentator is I help open up IBD meetup groups across the country. These are people that use, you know, IBD. They use the CANSIM investing system, and they're free. They're meetup clubs that, you know, anybody listening to your show could go check them out. Just investors.com/meetup. They can find one. And I met so many people that were having success. And I thought, you know, I've got to tell these stories. I've got to put these in a book. These are fascinating. They're motivating. They're encouraging. They're exciting. And I was really blown over. And now I also tell the mistakes that people have made.
Yeah, that's what I want to ask.
In investing, and some of the challenges that people went through. And, you know, they came back from, you know, some people made some pretty big mistakes. But I really tell the good, the bad, and how to do it. How did these people do it? Where did they find the stocks? When did they buy them? Why did they buy them? What did they see? And when did they sell them to lock in their profits? And everybody has a little bit different strategy depending on your risk level and probably depending on your experience level. Some people lock in their gains. 20 to 25%, they're done. It doesn't matter. If Chipotle went up another 300% after that, they continue. They just take 20 to 25% gains. That's what they're comfortable with. I have other people who will sit through a long consolidation, I guess we'll say, like in Apple or in Baidu, and they'll go up for these huge 400% gains. I have a guy with 440% gain in Apple. So people can reach success at all many, many different ways with CANSIM investing.
So let's kind of talk about some of the things that you have found historically that have been why people make mistakes. I mean, emotions are a big part. I know that. I talk about that all the time.
Yeah, but that's you know, arguments with the ego.
Yeah,
that was one of the big ones.
Yeah, I know I'm right. I know I'm right. I know I'm right.
So well, he was just so confident. He knew more. He knew much better than taking a 7 to 8% loss. He goes, "Oh, I know I'm right. I know I'm right." When you start saying that to yourself instead of paying attention to what the chart is telling you, you run into a lot of trouble. And what I've tried to do, what Bill's taught me to do, it doesn't matter what I think. It only matters what the market is doing. You got to keep your ego out of it, and that was probably the number one thing. And everybody admitted to it. And if they got a stock, they fell in love with a stock. And they said, oh, this Apple's been so good to me, I'm going to hold on to it forever. Well, if you take a look at Apple right now, it's correcting. Now would probably be not a good time to be holding it. So it's stories like that. It's just learning to get yourself out of the way, deal with the facts, and make sure you don't get your ego involved in investing.
Yeah, what I say is it's okay to love a stock, by the way. But here's the rule. You only love a stock as long as it loves you.
That's right.
That's it.
Well, you know what Bill says.
What is it?
He says a stock is only good if it goes up.
Right, exactly, exactly.
You know.
So what are the things, so we know that ego is an issue there. We know that, you know, probably improper understanding of the education, all that good stuff that goes on. Talk about some of the things that really make people successful.
I think that they have a set of rules, and I always hate to say that because people cringe. They go, oh, no, is she going to make me do a workbook? Is this going to be painful? But it really is just the simple rules that Bill uses. You know, you keep your losses small. That's one thing. The other thing that I found is that people did a regular routine, not an onerous one, not a long one, but just they dedicated a few minutes when they came home from work in the evening, 10 minutes, 20 minutes. They figured out what they were going to buy if it broke out the next day. Sometimes they entered trade triggers through their brokerage account, and they're done. And then they go to work the next day, and if their trade gets triggered, they go check and see what the volume was like, see how the stock is acting. Do they want to hold on to the stock? And so that's what I found. People just do a really simple, regular routine. And also people that stick with it. You know, when the market is bad, if mm-hmm. people just walk away, you will get caught. And people in the book did. They said, I walked away from the market. I stopped watching it. I stopped paying attention. We had a big new uptrend, and I missed the first 6 weeks mm-hmm. of this huge new bull market. Mm-hmm. So that's another mistake. The successful people said, you know what? I'm going to pay attention every day, just a little bit every single day.
Yeah, and one of the things that I know that IBD teaches is a couple things. Number one, a watch list. You know, you kind of, during those times when you should be, when you do walk away,
right.
because you know, should be hands off and you don't have to be in something at all times. And depending on how your strategy works and where your positions are, the fact is you create a watch list and then create some alerts in those watch lists, because sometimes, you know, even before the market does break in the right direction, a stock may be doing something totally different and you may be really onto a real winner here.
That's right.
I think that's important.
And a lot of stocks, you know, when the market's correcting too, you know, you may take a look at a stock and you think, boy, that thing doesn't look very good. But it may be building a base, and you have to be patient. That's another thing I did notice in the successful people. Patience, waiting for the stock to really come out of that area of consolidation, looking for the big volume to confirm that the institutions are in there buying it. So there's some key things in here. But the thing is, what I found, and I don't want to make investing sound overly simplistic, but the stories in the book are very, very clear. It doesn't have to be onerous. It doesn't have to be overly complicated to have success.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. So now, when it comes to that whole idea of, you mentioned, you know, the market is right, get your ego aside. I want to talk to you about something that is you know, sometimes you also get a picture of something. You get an idea about something. You get something that doesn't sit right, and then you got that name in your head, and that now all of a sudden you're never going to invest in that name no matter what. For example, SodaStream. That's something that you and I have talked about, something I know that has been, you know, a stock is, you know, looking like it could set up. This is a manufacturer of
the bubbly carbonated water. You can make your own Perrier, Andrew.
Which, by the way, is the stupidest thing I ever heard, by the way. I just want to say that, because this is like the old days of seltzer bottles.
Right.
I don't know how long. I mean, I remember my grandmother used to put the seltzer bottles outside, and then, you know, the seltzer man would come by and give you, you get the spritzer and all that. And, you know, now you can make it at home, and you can make cola at home and all this stuff, and you save all this money, supposedly, and it's great. I know people that have this thing, and they like it. Okay, great. That's nice. It just seems to me that, you know, I have a real problem when it comes to, quote unquote, potential fads. You know, I had a big problem years ago, big problem with Crocs when it was running up. I was like a lunatic about it. You know, I was really concerned about like how far Netflix ran up.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. You know, but the fact of the matter is you can't make money being right if you're not investing in the right direction of it. So, but SodaStream, is this really a company that, is this real?
All I can tell you, and I agree with you, and by the way, you had good company, because I also decided that I didn't like Crocs. I ignored the earnings. I said, those are the ugliest shoes I've ever seen in my life. And my daughter said, but Mom, she was doing some work at a hospital in USC, around USC, and she said, Mom, you know, all the doctors are wearing them. They're flying off the shelves. They're really popular. So I also, you see, that was my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And the market doesn't care about my opinion. You know, that we only care about earnings and sales. And that company made a big run. So I missed that one, too. And now, SodaStream, all I can tell you, I don't own one. I have some friends that own them that absolutely love, they just love it. They love making their own bubbly water at home. And the thing, I guess, we have to look for, how much of a fad is it? You know, when I first saw Green Mountain Coffee Roasters, I had the same thing. I was like, coffee? What's new about coffee? Oh, okay, you get individual little brewed cups of coffee. I get it now. They sold it at Walmart. It was a big seller. They had a lot of distribution there by selling through Walmart. So I guess with soda, we have to keep looking at the earnings.
I suppose. Do you have a pair of Crocs?
I don't, I never will, because nope. I missed that stock.
But can I tell you something? Let me tell you something. I went out and I bought a pair.
You did.
And now I have three pairs, because now if you go look, I'd like you to go look at the website about this, by the way, seriously. I mean, the stock has done poorly, but there's been some interesting times with it. But they have some really cool new things. For example, they have like a dock-sider kind of top-sider kind of shoe. They have the old-fashioned uglies, of course. But they have a whole, like they have one that changes color, whether you're in the sun or in the dark for kids and stuff. There's just all these cool things. I'm just saying, they really have done quite the job to, I don't know about reinvent themselves, but get away from the real ugly open hold gibbets kind of Crocs thing. But anyway, just an interesting point there. All right. So
you know, I, something kind of fun to share with you, Andrew. One of the people that I interviewed in the book is Kier McDonnell, and he has a hedge fund in Boston. And one thing that he noticed were shoe fads. And so your listeners might keep this in mind. Every so often, we have a shoe fad. And I know you said you're not a fan of fads, but just keep an eye on the earnings. So we had Crocs. Think about Skechers. Think about Uggs boots. Mm-hmm. Think about Nike shoes. So sometimes shoe fads can result in big earnings. So that's just something fun to look out for.
But, you know, it's interesting. Just another confession, because it's only you and I talking here. Nobody's listening.
It's just the two of us, right?
When Skechers came out with that bizarro design where it was supposed to exercise as you walked and the whole thing.
I know what you were going to say.
I looked at it very carefully and I said, this is really, really stupid. Not just stupid, really, really stupid. And I looked at what was happening. I looked at the stock move and all that, and I actually went short. Well, Jim Cramer comes out with his stuff, you know, how great this is. And the stock, you know, he wouldn't leave it alone. And the stock kept on running, you know, moving up higher, higher, higher. Well, meanwhile, you know where the stock went after that, you know, to the toilet. But, you know, so and then you have, by the way, you have Deckers. Deckers is a pretty wild name right now. I mean, the whole idea of Ugg boots maybe have, you know, faded a little bit, and the stock just got, I mean, obliterated. So, you know, that's kind of, you know, you got to wait for that to the next thing. So one of the things I know you look for IBD is you're looking for quality and fundamentals. You're looking for things like consistency in earnings over time and over above a certain level. And you're looking for a whole host of other things that are going to give you a solid fundamental base. And then obviously you're looking for the technicals to confirm that. So one of the things I know, you know, I talked to Scott O'Neill quite often, and you know the Market Smith product, of course, is the hub of all this, right?
Oh, Market Smith is a fabulous product. You know, I'm looking at, we were talking about soda. I opened up a chart of soda right now. I'm looking at a Market Smith screen as we speak. It's a fabulous tool, and I'll tell you why. Because I'm short on time. I'm sure you are too. I do other things here at IBD, and I open this up. I've got my chart. They've got pattern recognition so that if you quickly want to see the cup with handle, it's drawn. I can see the depth of the cup. I can see the handle and the depth of the handle. I can see earnings right here. Boom, boom, boom. 3 quarters in a row, 4 quarters in a row. I can look up and see what institutions own SodaStream. So mm-hmm. Is it Fidelity? Is it an institutional name that I think does very well consistently? I can look and see who owns it. It's just a very... saves me time. It's quick. I think they've done a great job with it. Bravo to Scott and the Market Smith guys upstairs. They're fantastic. They're really great.
Yeah, they've done a great job with that. That's awesome. So that goes hand in hand with what you're talking about here. So again, the book's name is How to Make Money in Stocks: Success Stories. It's kind of a add-on, or I guess it's the success stories based on all the different things that you've read in various, well, talking to the people here that are listening, all the people that have read, you know, Bill O'Neill's books and, you know, his How to Make Money in Stocks and the lessons and the various training programs they have, and kind of gives you a little bit more of a personal look as to what they're doing in interview style, as well as, you know, what things they've done right and done wrong. So that maybe you don't have to make those mistakes.
That's right.
Right?
You know what my wish for the book is? I hope there's somebody listening now to your show, that How to Make Money in Stocks: Success Stories. I want someone to read it. It's very inexpensive. It's $10 on Amazon. It's discounted already from $18. It's a bestseller. I want someone to read the stories. I want them to write their own success stories. I want them to let me know, and I'm going to put it in the next book. That would make me... You know what? That's our job. If I don't help people, because I do the market rep video and I talk to groups, my whole goal really is to just help people become more successful. So I really hope you'll let me know, right? If you hear from one of your listeners and they had success, I would be thrilled to death.
That'd be great.
I would say bravo to them.
Yep, I hear you. Amy Smith, thanks for joining me today. I appreciate it. And keep up the great work with all the things that you do on IBD, as well as, you know, in this kind of thing of trying to help out people understand more about how to invest and how to make money and not fail, because that's a big issue. A lot of people fail in this because they kind of don't, you know, go the right direction. They're, you know, looking to hit home runs all the time versus a couple of singles, doubles, and maybe a triple here and there, and, you know, then take their money and kind of move on to the next thing. So I appreciate you coming aboard. Keep up the great work.
Oh, thank you, Andrew. You take care. It's my pleasure.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Great insight, great lessons, and that's what this show is all about, trying to learn along the way, make some money too if we can, and that's why we try to provide you some, you know, insight that you're not going to find
necessarily with any of the TV shows that are out there or, you know, the radio commentary. Oftentimes you find so many permabulls or permabears. We try to kind of straddle both and bring up different topics, whether it's like we talked about the VIX lately, or whether it's we talk about a great book that came out, or whether we talk about a particular stock, style, the economy, et cetera. So I want to thank you for joining me. Do me a favor, if you enjoy the show, go over and put a, not just a rating, but an actual review on iTunes. It's always helpful to understand what our audience is thinking, and a majority of you listen through iTunes of some sort, some other platforms as well. And we have listeners from around the world in Germany, Japan, China, all the way through, obviously, the United States and Canada, South America. We get those lists, and we're always astounded at the quality of an amount of listeners that we have from places I would have never thought of that were listening to the show. So hello to everybody out there around the world, and I appreciate you listening in. Make sure to tell some friends. Until next week, I want to thank you. Have a very profitable week, and I'll see you then. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.